Sisters in Organized Crime in Buffalo. It's a brand new book out, and I am just enthralled by this. I got an email about it, somebody telling me about it, and then got a copy of the book, and it's a difficult book to put down. I've got to tell you, Michael, you've got to be commended. Good morning. Welcome. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, give us a little bit of background before we get into the book itself. What made you interested, or why did you do a book? Is this your first endeavor as an author?
It's my fifth book.
Your fifth book. Yes. Okay, so give us some of the background. What other books have you done?
My very first book was The History of Buffalo's Mayors. It's basically the encyclopedia of Buffalo's mayoral history. Wrote about retelling history, 998.
What was it, Sattler's, 998
yep.
Broadway? Yeah.
Yep. A Polish gangster book from the 20s, and a book of color photos of old commercial buildings in the city. But this book and how I got into this subject goes back 10, 12 years ago when just out of the blue I realized that there wasn't a book on this subject matter, so I thought that I would work on it. And so I started collecting a lot of information, FBI documents, other books, and ran into a guy who actually was writing a book on it, so I put it aside, and instead we started a tour company and started doing tours based on the same subject matter.
Is that like mobster tours or something?
Yeah, it's called Naked Buffalo now, but we have three different mob tours. Mm. And eventually I came back around last year and decided to write this book.
Naked Buffalo, I've actually seen, I've seen things with regard to that as well, but is Buffalo, we know that Buffalo has got a rich history as far as, you start talking about architecture and things like this. When I think of gang members in Buffalo, I would think of gangsters, I guess, in Buffalo. I would think of Stefano Magadino, the Don. I mean, that would be the first thing that would come to mind, probably because as I was growing up, that was what I heard, that was the individual that I heard most about. But I thought it was interesting that in your book, you talk about, as you said, there were Polish mobsters. There were all different kinds of nationalities, all different kinds of people, and some very, very colorful people, and some people that I've never heard about before. Mm-hmm. Now, when you start, you got interested in this, where was your first step? Was it the library?
Well, we had started just collecting, Freedom of Information documents from the FBI. So we just started gathering those, and then it was, looking into newspaper archives. I'd already collected, two boxes of newspaper articles. So, it was those things, and then reading some other books and actually talking to some other historians, mafia historians, to see, what their belief was in a lot of this, because Buffalo was really unrepresented in the historical sense. So I wanted to put together the most accurate picture I could.
Now, as an author, how do you go about doing this? Do you write a few pages a day? Do you write a chapter a day? Do you do it as it inspires you? How does the process work, and how long did it take you to do a book that's, 250 pages or so?
This one was, I had a deadline, and I was given 6 months. I had my choice, and I took the shorter one, which made me have to work even harder and faster. I mean, there was a few weeks where I worked, 50 hours alone on the book. And then it was working almost every day on this. And it's, between, you start to kind of formulate the order you want to put it in, and as you're going along, it starts to, reformat itself. And eventually, you come out with the format you want and the chapter breakdown. And then the story kind of, all of a sudden you find part of the story needs to move, and you just keep moving it around until it comes into an order that looks pretty presentable.
So, is this what you do for a living? I mean, do you have other stuff that you do?
I wish.
so this kind of, you have to fit this into your regular life.
Yes.
50 hours a week into whatever you regularly do.
That, along with the tours that we give,
and do you have a family life as well?
I have a 2.5-year-old, so yes, I do.
Right. Well, when you sit down, we've all heard about writer's block. We've all heard about ways that it's conducive to do this. Is there a specific place that you sit down at? And do you do it on a word processor? Do you do it on a typewriter? Do you do it on a computer? I mean, do you sit down? I mean, I know it sounds weird, but there are some people that just, an author I've talked about before, Robert P. Parker, did the Spencer novels. He had a typewriter he sat down at in his den, specific place, every day, and he used that typewriter because of the fact that that was what he felt most comfortable with. Yeah. And he might do 3 or 4 pages a day, and then he just kind of, go off and, but everything would come back to the book he was writing. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he went out for coffee, he might be talking to somebody that said, you know, here's something that you might find interesting. And the only thing that I wonder, you know, with regard to you, one of the things that I wonder is, if you go out and you're researching this, how do people respond to you asking questions about mobsters or gangsters?
Very, very careful who I talk to and, you know, who I ask questions of, because I know it's a sensitive subject, especially for Italians. Because for many years they were just all pigeonholed as, you know, if you're Italian, you must be related to it.
Right,
I was very careful on who I chose, and it was primarily other historians and, you know, law enforcement people that I talked to.
Well, Rizzo, I mean, you got to be a gumbay, a compare, you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, I think that the, you know, when you go to research something like this, it's got to be fascinating and overwhelming at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you go about taking down, like, the information? I mean, you know, when you go in and you start looking at all this, do you sit down with pad and paper and start, you know, writing some stuff down? Do you dictate stuff? What do you do?
Actually, this book did a little bit different. I actually wrote most of it in a composition notebook.
You did?
Yeah, which was a little different. I had an idea for a chapter, so I would start to write it out. You know, I have papers and newspaper articles all strewn about on the same portion that I'm writing about, digging through things, and then I remember there might be a photo somewhere, so then I'm looking for a photo, and it just, that's kind of the way I did this book, which was different than a few of my other ones, which I just typed away on a, you know, on a computer.
What do you think was one of the most interesting things you found when researching gangsters and organized crime in Buffalo, Mike?
Well, I knew that gambling was a huge portion of organized crime in Buffalo, and that was the thing that they tried to take Magadino down with in the 1960s. So I ended up devoting, you know, more than a chapter on gambling itself. And the one thing that was interesting was to see that so many of the same faces were arrested or seen at gambling joints over the years. And a lot of times they didn't even serve time.
Was the fact that Buffalo is a border city, do you think that that was a big factor in making Buffalo notable when it came to organized crime?
I think that had something to do with it, and it also, when Magadino came here in 1922, the big cities were New York and Chicago, so Buffalo, Niagara Falls area were kind of in the middle, kind of out of the way, you know, being on the border. Eventually definitely helped them, especially during Prohibition.
Now, when you start talking about, you know, mafia and some of the different crime in the area, it's my understanding that the mafia kind of kept a lid on some of the things, you know, on prostitution and liquor and some of the different things like this. And if you talk to people, which you have, of course, talk to people that may be in their 70s and 80s and 90s now, they'll say, you know what, the neighborhoods were a lot safer then because, you know, they didn't have the mafia, you know, had a code, I think, that they lived by. I want to ask you a little bit about that. But they also, people didn't mess with them because they didn't have the same restraints that the police department did.
Right.
You know, if they wanted to go in and kick some tail, they would go in and do it, right?
Right. Yeah, that was, definitely heard that in Niagara Falls. A lot of people compare, you know, Magadino's death with the decline of the city, which was possibly a little portion of it. At the same time, a lot of businesses shut down, too. But that time frame, you know, people just see, oh, the mafia disappeared and, you know, our city went down at the same time. But, yeah, there was definitely a lot of that. You know, other parts of Buffalo, too, where people said that it used to be, you know, a lot nicer. And then, you know, after those guys disappeared, things changed. So, you know, that had some impact over time.
You didn't have any, in researching this, any inkling as to the whereabouts of Jimmy Hoffa, did you?
No, I mean, I read a few things, but no, it didn't. It didn't point me to anything new.
Anything that you that you wanted to talk about? What about in the city of Niagara Falls? I grew up in the Falls. I was born and raised in the Falls. Magadino Memorial Chapel, a funeral home, there in the Falls, not too far from the high school. There's all kinds of stories.
Mm-hmm.
Stories that there are caverns and tunnels underneath in the event they want to get out of here. Stories, and one that I read in your book here, and I don't know if it's true or not, but there was some mention as to some of the caskets were built in a certain way so that they could hide a second body in there. Tell us, did you run across some of that stuff, right?
Yeah, heard those stories, all of those. The double casket one was something that, you know, whether they actually claimed that they did that or other people said they did it, the Bonanno family out of New York, which was his first cousin, they also claimed to do that too. So nobody's sure if anybody really did it. They'd have to start digging on bodies to find out if that happened. But it is an interesting story. The tunnels, too. Especially in Niagara Falls, there were supposedly tunnels everywhere. And actually, on one of my tours, I had a guy that worked for the water department, and I asked him about that, and he said, no, there's no tunnels here or there or anywhere. So I think some of it was discounted after that.
Any famous night spots that that came up that were places for frequent meetings?
Frequent meetings in Niagara Falls, quite a few places, but the Como restaurant was a popular place.
Landmark restaurant in the falls, right? Everybody used to go.
Yeah, it's a great place. Food's great, but they met there a lot for lunches, and of course they would have informal meetings. The FBI liked to bother them when they were doing that too, but there were other places. Round the Clock restaurant used to be up now.
I remember that, right? Main Street in the Falls, yeah.
That was one of the places that actually led to their downfall.
And right across the street from used to be an Armory. The Armory Grill used to be right across the street from that, yeah.
Yep, and in Buffalo, a lot of different places. Deco Restaurants was a place where, you know, a lot of times the diners on Allen Street, there were a couple bars that they used to hang out in. But, and a few other places on the west side, too.
And do you think that was Buffalo any more connected than Ohio or than Cleveland or than Chicago or at the time, or any less?
I think the major difference probably is that Magadino was one of the top members of, you know, what they called the Mafia Commission. And he was one of the seven members from 1930 or so until 1958. So, I mean, during that time frame especially, he probably had more sway than cities like Cleveland or some of the other ones. Chicago obviously had as much, Chicago and New York. But after 1958, it kind of spread out a little bit more.
It's going to be a difficult question probably to answer, but in researching this, because you know, you may come to mind when you brought up Chicago. Chicago, there were politicians involved in this whole thing. When you go back and look through history, and you were doing the book, a lot of police that might have been involved in ways that might not be quite as good as they should have been.
There was a quote from a custom agent that said that Stefano Magadino controlled everything in Niagara Falls except for the water. So that was. There was another person, an informant, that said that he had people from DAs to judges to politicians, and of course there were police. There was a raid on a place on Allen Street in Buffalo, early 60s, and IRS was doing the raid, and they didn't tell the Buffalo police until right before the raid, and during the raid somebody made a call there telling them to shut down. So yes, there were people tied in everywhere.
You know, We talk, you know, a lot about Stefano Magadino, but what about some of the other characters that are in the annals of organized crime in Buffalo? Other notables?
Well, the one of the big ones was that was the one other book I did. John Kwiatkowski, his nickname was Corny, and Polish gang from about 1925 through 29, ran the east side out through Depew, Lancaster area. And they were vicious. These were guys that would big thing was payroll robberies, and they would shoot to kill anybody in their way, and they ended up paying for it in the end. But they were as vicious as any other gang. Now, as powerful as like Magadino and such, probably not. But they definitely had their place at the time.
You mentioned that some people thought that once Magadino passed away, you know, Niagara Falls kind of went to hell in a handbasket, if you excuse the expression. There are other people that say that unions, and the unions that were, you know, recently in the last 10, 15 years taken down by the FBI in the Falls, made Niagara Falls a very difficult place to do business. As far as building things. And part of the reason why some things flourished in Buffalo and other areas and didn't flourish in the Falls, because people just didn't want to deal with them. Did you run into any of that?
I didn't run into that, but I did read in a lot about that, including, you know, what you're speaking of there. And it probably did have an impact. It did have some impact in Buffalo also, but I think in Niagara Falls it had a bigger impact. I mean, in Buffalo, the former federal building on Delaware, 1971, same thing. The union seemed to be holding up the construction until they hired somebody to come in and straighten them out so they would complete it. Took a year late. They were a year late, but they still finished it.
What about when you were researching this and you talked to the FBI, you made a comment that you would have to speak to former FBI agents to get the information that you needed to get for the book because of the dates that were involved. And even though these guys were retired, a lot of them weren't willing to talk, right?
Yeah.
And what's the reason for that?
One of the reasons was one of the guys is a former head of the Buffalo FBI. He's still involved in, he's still active. But he said that everything they do, even after retirement, is still confidential. They're not supposed to reveal anything. So that was part of it. And in Buffalo, it's there's only one or two guys that deal with organized crime now because it's gone down a lot.
Any correlation? I mean, there have been, you know, rumors and theories that there organized crime and the mafia was involved in the Kennedy assassination. Did you run across any comments with regard to that in any of your research?
Read a lot of things, and Magadino, there's a couple quotes that were picked up on wiretaps over the years that are repeated that, you know, they're joking about the assassination at the time. He's not joking, some other people, and he tells everybody they have to, you know, be quiet because they could be listening. But there's really no, you know, as far as I can tell, no proof that, that they had anything to do with it. There are some authors that believe it was directly tied to them. And it, there is some reason to believe that it might have been with the Kennedys based on Robert Kennedy's, you know, going after the mafia after they were in office.
You know, you list the organization in Buffalo. And, of course, the boss of Western New York as being Stefano Magadino and Western New York as well as the Ohio Valley area. Then you go down, and then they have relatives of the boss. Were relatives of the boss, now they're at the very bottom of this chart that you say here, were they just people of interest or were they people that were involved as well?
Well, his brother Nino was questionable how involved he was. It's believed that he was the one that would generally go out on the street and tell what Stefano wanted people to know. Stefano didn't use the phone to broadcast any information. It's believed that Nino would do that. His three son-in-laws were involved in their legitimate businesses that they ran, the funeral home, a linen supply business, also
Camellia Linen.
Camellia, yeah. Yep. And also the beer distributor they had in up until the 50s. So they were all involved in legitimate businesses.
During the, well, I would think it would have to be in the 60s or 70s now, probably in the 70s, there was a judge from Niagara Falls that disappeared, Judge Kellick. And under mysterious circumstances, any mention of anything like that that you saw? Nothing in
your mind. No, never even came across that.
Never even came across that. Pretty interesting. Yeah. Now, what about Whitney Avenue, one of the places mentioned, and I know because I had relatives that lived on Whitney Avenue, and I remember them saying that at one time, was it somebody bombed at one of Magadino's house? And and so they would, they didn't feel, there wasn't any kind of a code that you ran across that said, leave, you know, wives and kids and family members alone and just deal with the principles that were in the mafia. Did you hear anything about this? Or?
Well, that was their basic, you know, ethical code. You know, you don't touch law enforcement, you don't touch women, children. But this one was a little different. Whitney Avenue was known as Mafia Row. That's where Magadino, his sister, and some other guys all lived. And in 1936, he lived right next door to his sister. A bomb was put in front of her door. And they believe it was actually intended for her husband, who was a bookmaker. But she ended up getting killed, and her three children were all injured by it. Supposedly, Magadino, you know, got revenge on who he thought was involved the following month.
When you were researching this, Did you get a number of doors slammed in your face? Did you ever get any, have any threats, you know, held against you? Did you, was there ever a time where you said, you know what, I'm going to have to put this book down for a while because I just have to get some distance?
No, no, I, other than like the FBI agents who wouldn't even talk about it, it was, for the most part, it's a historical look at, you know, Buffalo's organized crime history and some older gangsters. So I really didn't have anybody doing that again. This book is new for Buffalo, but these kind of books have been written about every major city in the country. I just thought it was time for Buffalo to have one and, you know, tell their history too. So
how long did it take you to write?
About 6 months.
6 months, you know, so that was the time frame that you were given, and that was exactly what it took you to, yeah, to do it. Anything you found out after you finished the book that you wish you would have gotten more into?
No, because I've kind of stepped away from it a little, taken a little breather, so I haven't really looked at it. Although I've met more people since the book has come out and on some of our tours too, some people that are related to other people in there, and I've heard more stories, which are always interesting.
You know, I actually heard at one point, I don't know how true it is, and I have a number of friends that work for the FBI and never really comment on it, that not only organized crime, but as far as spies are concerned, Niagara Falls being here was a great place for people to get in and get out of. And I got to think, even with gangsters or organized crime, because there's so many tourists and there's such an influx of people, 7.5 or 8 million or whatever people that come in during the course of the summer months. And because, you know, you've got Montreal and you got Toronto and you got Buffalo and you got Cleveland, and you got Chicago and you got Detroit and you got, you know, it's kind of like it would be easy for people to come through here and not be noticed. Must have been a big challenge for the FBI at the time, huh?
Well, you know, it probably was, but, you know, up until the early 60s, they didn't really have much to do with organized crime. J. Edgar Hoover didn't want to, you know, bother with that, with it. He kind of ignored it until Appalachian in 1957. And then he started to look into it, and it really wasn't until the 60s that they started going after these guys a little bit harder than they had.
What do you think was the most interesting thing? What was one of the, I asked you about, you know, people that you found that were interesting. What do you think was the most interesting thread that kind of drew the whole book together for you?
Again, it probably goes back to the gambling aspect, how big it was. You know, there were no lotteries, casinos, things like that. So people needed an outlet, and these guys provided that. And to see how many people were involved in that and how many locations were involved, and that a lot of times, again, few arrests, or when they were arrested, they would serve no jail time. I mean, it was interesting to see how that played out over the years.
Notable hits in the Buffalo area? Any that really stand out for you?
The one that most people remember if they're old enough, Roseland, former Roseland restaurant, and that was John Camilleri. But there were some other ones. There was quite a few of them in the late 50s, early 60s, and a couple people that were shot that survived. So a few interesting things.
Did the name Valachi come up at all in you?
Valachi, yeah. Valachi, definitely, because he has a direct tie in that he helped to lay out the organizational chart for Buffalo during his testimony, but also he's buried up in Lewiston. So that's an interesting part of the story.
A lot of relatives still in the area?
There are, again, second, third generation, you know, legitimate people, all doing, you know, legitimate work. So there are quite a few people still in the area.
I recall, as I was growing up, hearing on the news, I think it was on the Niagara Falls station, as my parents had it on before I got into radio, about a raid being made at Stefano Magadino's house and large sums of cash being found in a suitcase. Was this lore, or did this really happen?
No, that really happened. That was in November 68 when they finally arrested him. First time since 1921 he had been arrested. And, yeah, they found the equivalent between the funeral home and his son Peter's house, equivalent in today's dollars of over $3
million. Over $3 million then. Think that what that would be worth today.
Well, that's today's dollars.
Today's
dollars. And so it was a good chunk of money, and that kind of led to the downfall of the Magadino family, and it started to break apart at that point.
You know, the now the FBI has all kinds of ways. You know, wiretaps used to be kind of a thing of the past. I guess they still use them, but I mean, they can use lasers now that can, you know, check the vibration on a window and kind of tell what people are doing inside there. I've got to think that the organized crime gangsters in those days must have almost been afraid to use the phones, right?
A lot of them were, and Magadino, you know, he had that, you know, the word, do not use the phone, do not ever talk, you know, business, anything, on the phones, and they did have his funeral home bugged, and he still was smart enough never to say anything that could incriminate him. I was surprised with, you know, the volumes of information. They still didn't get anything off of those wiretaps like that.
We're talking to Michael Russo this morning, and Mike's the author of a book, Gangsters and Organized Crime in Buffalo, History Hits and Headquarters. Mike, what about the other side? I mean, we've only got a few minutes left here, but what about the other side of the coin? We heard about how ruthless these people could be, but was there a side of them that could have been a benefactor to? Were they charitable to their friends? Were they charitable to the community? Did they kind of help out the community? Did you run across any of that in the book?
Yeah, I found quite a few photos of them posing for Easter seals and other thing, you know, other charitable events that they either sponsored or they were, you know, chairpersons of. Plus, you know, there's folklore stories about Magadino walking down Pine Avenue and handing money to little kids and things like that.
Was that true? I heard that exact same thing.
I know. I have no idea.
You have no
idea
those?
That one's tough to figure out.
Now, what about, you know, they were, I would imagine, growing up Catholic, probably involved in their church. You know, you see these things, you know, they go to church on Sunday and things like this. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting to think that if they are contributing, you know, to the plate every Sunday, where's that money coming from? Anybody ever care about that? You know, or whatever the case may be. But that was a very real part of it, right? They were religious, in some fashion. Right?
And Stefano himself too. He was a little odd in that he never had a girlfriend, which was often common. He was pretty much a family man. He would you know, go to church on Sunday, go to work every day. And like I said, they did run legitimate businesses, so they did have some income that they could use for the plate there. But yeah, so they were in some aspects, you know, regular people.
Now, in the time that the FBI was investigating, federal authorities investigating the Magadinos and other mafia and organized crime in Buffalo, specifically though, Magadinos, sometimes they didn't make any bones about it, right? I mean, they would sit there, and if there was a funeral or something going on, they would just stand outside and take pictures, right?
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, during his funeral itself, which was held at his funeral home, everybody was kept at bay. It was a private ceremony, so they kept everybody back. But yes, they were there taking photos of everybody, and they were often there taking photos of other prominent people or family members because they knew a lot of these guys would show up at the funeral home. So yeah, and a lot of times they knew who all the FBI agents were. So sometimes they would go up and say hi.
Do you think that some of it was done just to harass?
I think partially to harass, to watch what they're, you know, see what they're doing, where they're going, you know, just to let them know that they were around.
Where does the book end as far as dates are concerned?
Go ahead.
No.
I was going to say pretty much in mid-80s. I mean, it's before that, but there are a few murders during the mid-80s, and that's pretty much where the book ends.
Do you think that most of the characters, for lack of a better term, I hope I'm not offending anybody by saying that, but characters in here, do you think most of the families now have turn to something else and something that is more, that is legal and something that they haven't carried on the tradition, so to speak?
No, I believe most of everybody that's related is, they're all legitimate people now. Yeah. In fact, I met someone over the weekend who was a sister of one of these guys, so, and her nephew and grandchildren and everything, so it was, they're all just regular people.
All right, what's next for Michael Russo? What do you think the next book's going to be, Mike?
Well, I've got three more in some planning stage for the next couple of years, so there's going to be a variety of different
topics.
Topics, yeah.
All about local things?
They're all local history.
That's very good. Well, Michael, we wish you the best in the future. Let me mention again, it's Gangsters and Organized Crime in Buffalo, History Hits and Headquarters. It's put out by the History Press. And I take it that it's available at, you know, at bookstores and Amazon. Yeah,
and I will be doing a signing July 21st at McKinley Barnes & Noble.
Oh, okay. That's great. We'll look forward to that, too. Michael, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And thanks for all the efforts you put into this book and to the ones you've done previously. And I hope when the next one comes out, you'll come and join us again.
You've been listening to What's Right About Western New York, a community affairs program provided to you by 93.7 WBLK. The views, opinions, and comments.